You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Over the middle, caught Saunders, Jalen Saunders, touchdown.
Harris to the end zone.
Mazzoli chased down, end zone, touchdown, Luke Tasker. Into tight traffic, this looks like it's picked, it is picked by Richard Leonard. On second down, Mazzoli looks for Banks in deep, and Banks makes the catch, touchdown. Beats two Ottawa defenders of the football, Pruno and Rowe. And Banks has his second touchdown catch of the game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, last week we put the call out to listeners about Mike Carrigan, someone that we both considered a blind spot in our Ticat fandom. And one of our listeners, Steve, was kind enough to send a very in-depth email. And he basically said that Mike Carrigan was a good quarterback, but not someone that you could rely on week in and week out. And I guess sort of he was a big game player, if that makes sense. Apparently, in playoff games, he specifically pointed out his play in the second game of the 86 East Final. Remember, that was back when they played two games, total point right. Series, which I know will never happen
again.
Seems so weird, right?
I don't
know. It is very weird, but I don't know. I think it'd be kind of cool to maybe bring that back. It's never going to happen, and that's fine.
Sounds like too much like soccer to me.
It is a little bit.
But on aggregate and all this crap. No, I disagree.
Weird stuff.
Don't bring it back.
Okay, bring it back, Mike says. I disagree with him. He can go to hell. And he singled out his play in that game. Ticats were down by 26, and he brought them back, and he singled out his play in the 86 and 89 Grey Cups. And his closing comments, which I'll say verbatim, I think sums it up best. He's not a QB that I would want for the regular season, but I'll take him for the playoffs anytime. So thank you, Steve, for your input. And I guess maybe his lack of regular season success is why we don't look at him as one of the top Ticat quarterbacks. I do remember he was the quarterback when they went to like two or three Grey Cups in a span there, and their records were never very good in the regular season. They were always like hovering around 500, kind of like the team we have now, but they would get the breaks in the playoffs, and they would make the moves in the playoffs, and he'd get to the cup. So I guess that's right. Why. I guess his regular season play left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, because in 86, they were immense underdogs from what I can not remember, but what I've looked back on. And they were pretty big underdogs to the Edmonton Eskimos and gave them a pretty good whooping. So, yeah, it's great to get some insight on Mike Carrigan. Thanks a lot for that, Steve.
All right, let's move on to actual now stuff with the Ticats. Minicamp came and went last week. Man, oh man, minicamp being here means the football is right around the corner. Ticats took a bit of a different approach in this year's minicamp than they did in years past. They brought almost everyone to Hamilton for this camp. And the reasons given by June Jones was that they are changing terminology and stuff like that, and they wanted to kind of get a head start on the main camp. Mike, I didn't attend any training camp, any mini camp. Obviously, you didn't as well. But I kept up on it through Twitter and through stuff like Drew Edwards on 3Down. What did you kind of think of like the overall vibe of mini camp? What did you take from what you read?
Well, I like this idea of bringing in most, if not all, of the veterans. I think there's maybe two veteran players that weren't there. I like this philosophy compared to what Austin has done in the past, which is it was a showcase for the new talent that they were bringing in. But I like the fact that the veterans were together. You know, get them together as much as possible. If you have the opportunity to get them into minicamp and get a jump start on the offense or the defense, then I think they should do it. And I think it's great that June Jones and the rest of the staff has implemented this.
What did you think about hearing the news that Nikita Whitlock, the 250-pound defensive lineman, was lining up at running back?
That's very interesting to me. Might be a change of pace back. that they throw in there occasionally, maybe put him in as a fullback, because I don't think that they resigned their fullback from last season.
They did not. They do not. Actually, yes. I have a list of the depth chart on my computer that I update every time they make a signing. They do not have a fullback currently on the roster. 250-pound fullback.
Maybe they'll line up in I formation and give them the ball when it's second and short, third and short, which I would love. So it's a very interesting it's very interesting news that they take a guy from the defensive side and put them on the offensive side, kind of what Chris Jones is known for, you know, switching it up a bit.
Yeah, now Whitlock does have some experience playing on the offense. When he was in the NFL with the New York Giants, he played fullback with them for like a whole season. I don't think it's usual for an American to be a fullback in the CFL, so I'm not sure how that would work ratio-wise, because it's weird, the American fullback doesn't, like, or the fullback itself doesn't count as one of the starters. It's like, I don't know, the fullback position in the CFL is kind of weird. When you look at the roster, like, it's listed there, but yet, if you look at that with, they also list five starting receiver, like, it's just a strange, I don't know. I always find the fullback position kind of strange. That's really kind of a nebulous situation there. But what about him being like the goal line back? What if they throw him in there? Like you said, second and short, third and short. What about like first and one from the 1 yard line? And instead of doing the QB plunge, you just give this 250-pound ball of viciousness the football and let him just run over people. I think that'd be a really interesting dimension that most teams don't really have. They don't really have that big, huge man to kind of bully his way in for a touchdown or a first down. What about that? What about that as an idea?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea as well. You know, instead of using your quarterback and potentially getting him injured or bringing in the backup quarterback to dive forward, why not hand off the ball to the big 250-pounder and just let him plow into the end zone? I mean, I often think that in the CFL, you see a lot of first and one, second and one from the goal line. More than any other league, maybe there's more pass interference called in the end zone. Maybe that's the reason. But there's a lot of opportunities to punch in the ball from the 1 yard line, and why not use the big guy if available?
I think we as Ticat fans were lucky this mini camp because some of our fellow fans who went to camp were tweeting out their thoughts on mini camp, and none were better than Tina, who is a friend of the show. She was providing some great analysis of what she saw when she was there for a couple days at camp. Here's like, I just want to give out like a small sampling of what she had to say. Maybe we can discuss it. And if you really want to see everything out there as a listener, you want to see what she had to say, go follow her on Twitter at Tina Banshee. You won't regret it, especially if you're a Ticat fan. This was some of the most in-depth stuff outside of actual reporting that I saw. I just want to give us kind of a slight, like a Cole's Notes version of this, because I want people to go to her Twitter account and check her out there. But she was there day one and day three. From her day one thoughts, she seemed to be a fan of Vernon Adams. She was impressed by the speed of Akeem Haynes, which I think no one should really be that surprised by, seeing as he does have a bronze medal from the Olympics for being a sprinter. Yeah. She said Larry Dean looked in mid-season form, and she had good things to say about Abdul Kane, Demond Washington, which really got me excited, Don Unamba, and a newcomer in the secondary, Jamal Roll. So day three, she went there again, and her most impressed by, I think, a guy who you are a little enamored with, Storm Johnson. Said he had good size and speed, great jump through the line, straight power running, decent blocking, tough to bring down. She also had some praise for Nathan Ross, Jalen Saunders, and Damar Altman on both days. Mike, she was killing it on Twitter. I think we need to make her our official correspondent for training camp, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, if she's going to be there, I mean, she's you know, tweeting out lots of great information. So I totally agree with that. If she's at training camp, then she's our correspondent for sure.
What do you think about some of this insight? To me, I'm not surprised by a lot of it. Like it's like the Haynes thing, of course, the dude's a burner. But the Storm Johnson thing, I know you want to talk about Storm Johnson.
Yeah, I just love that name, Storm Johnson. It just rolls off the tongue. It'd be a beautiful thing to have him on the Ticats. But I'm looking at Drew Edwards' piece about who stood out to him at minicamp, and Storm Johnson.
You read my mind. That's where I was going next.
Yep, Storm Johnson is in that list. you know, Johnson was in the NFL. He was drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars in the seventh round. He's only 25 years old, so I don't know, like, what kind of – okay, so he's listed at 228 pounds, so he's a pretty big dude too, and he could run over some people. But I'll just list off some of the names that really impressed Drew, if you don't mind. We got Mariel Cooper at Sam linebacker. Felix Fulbert-Lucier. Sorry if I butchered that name.
I think you nailed it.
All right. At receiver, he's a Canadian. Simone Lawrence, apparently Drew is really impressed with him. We got Bobby Richardson, a defensive end. Jamal Roll, defensive back. And Liam Haralahu, the kicker, of course. He was impressed with him as well. So apparently Haralahu became accustomed to the swirling winds at Tim Hortons Field. So that's a good thing to hear too.
So Storm Johnson, I think you know, that's your boy, man. I think this is the guy that we're going to have to attach to. This is going to be your guy throughout the season if he makes this team.
Yeah, I'm pulling for him through training camp. Not that, you know, I'm a fan of Alex Green as well. He did a lot of good things last year, but you know, if Storm Johnson gets in the lineup or on the practice squad or whatever, I'll be a very happy man.
The name that popped out to me on Drew's list, and I'm glad you brought that up because, like I said, that's where I was going next after we talked about Tina's thoughts was Drew's thoughts, because that's a must-read. Drew's obviously there all the time, but that's a must-read for anyone who couldn't be at camp. That list of names was interesting. Mario Cooper, Sam linebacker. This team is still searching for a Sam linebacker that they really haven't had since Eric Harris departed the NFL a few years ago. They're giving Cooper first crack at this. That means Kinney's kicking back out to the secondary. Maybe this makes the team better. Based on Drew's analysis, it looks like Cooper's kind of built for that position. Mike, might we finally have the answer to the Sam linebacker question here in Hamilton?
I'm hoping so. It's a very important position. And, you know, that's one of the spots that needs to be filled. You know, there's not a lot of spots that I can see glaring deficiencies in, but that would be one of them. And you know, Kinney did a pretty good job last year, but that's not his natural spot. He wants to be in the secondary, you know, in one of those positions. So I'm glad that he's going back there, and hopefully this kid can turn out to be, you know, a starter from game one, and we can ride with him throughout the season.
So before we move on to the guy that I want to talk about, I just want to go back to Storm Johnson for a second. If you had to guess what his real first name is, what would you think it would be?
Ooh. I'm drawing a blank here. Why don't you enlighten me, buddy?
It's Storm. His given name is Storm. You hear Storm Johnson, okay. You think that's a nickname.
That was a trick question.
It was a trick question. But his name is Storm. Like, You know what? Dude's a beast.
Yep. Storm from birth.
Storm from birth. The guy I want to single out, Bobby Richardson, is a name on Drew's list, and it's another defensive lineman, an unknown that came into minicamp. When I hear names like this, I think back to Brian Hall, to Drake Nevis, to Davin Coleman. You know what I mean? Like, this team has been able to replenish on the defensive line with these American guys over and over again. It's like that's the thing that Ticats have become known for, is bringing in American defensive tackles, pairing them next to Teddy Laurent, watching them shine, and then going to the next guy. Like, this is a guy who I'm going to be keeping my eyes on when main camp starts in a couple of weeks now?
Yeah, it's getting pretty close, and you're absolutely right. I mean, there's been a plethora of defensive linemen that we've drafted over the last, you know, 5 or so years, so it's going to be interesting to see if they go in a different direction, maybe lighten up on the defensive lineman now that Austin's out of the picture. Not completely, but, you know, he's not drafting. He's not the VP anymore. So I'm interested to see what direction they go in. But just one thing I'd like to talk about minicamp is that June Jones and Jerry Glanville, just, you know, their interactions with the media, they seem to be happy to talk at length about this team, you know, at length about their past. You know, I was listening to their interviews on Ticats.ca, and they're a joy to listen to. They have so many stories. They've been around for so long that it's just fun listening to their experiences in football. And I like what they're saying about the team. You know, I believe both of them said that these are the best facilities they've ever walked into, and that's high praise. I mean, these guys have coached with the Oilers and the Falcons, you know, NFL teams, and they're saying these are the best facilities they've ever walked into. This is the best situation they've ever walked into, you know, the best players they've ever had. So it's just a lot of enthusiasm coming from them, and I really feel it.
Yeah, there's a laid-back demeanor to both guys, and I don't mean that in any way negative fashion. They seem comfortable in who they are and what they do. They're not trying to prove anything to anyone. Like, that's the vibe I get from them. They're here to be successful. June Jones said, like, I think we have the players here to win a Grey Cup, and he talks up his players. There's just something relentlessly positive about those two guys, Jones especially. And you mentioned it. I watch those videos on Ticats.ca, and they're 15 minutes long each day.
Yeah, I know.
These guys, they're telling stories. They're like, again, this is not to take anything away from Ken Austin, because if Ken Austin was still the head coach of this team, we'd support him as well. But there's definitely a different vibe around these guys and this team. It's almost night and day.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's such a change. And, you know, we'll see how it goes, if their demeanor changes, if they start losing or whatever. But I don't think it will. I think these guys have a positive attitude no matter what happens. You know, the PMA, positive mental attitude. And I think that it's a good thing. I believe that there's times when a coach like Ken Austin is necessary. You know, a guy that, you know, gets under their skin, you know, gets them motivated that way. But also, I think there's a time when you have guys like Jones that are positive feedback. So I think this is the right direction that the team's going in for next season.
Did you happen to watch the Jeremiah Mazzoli video on there as well? He seemed a lot more relaxed and jovial, and like, right. He's always kind of been like, I won't say he's short with the media, but he's always been like kind of to the point. You saw him laughing, you saw him smiling, like, it feels like he's really taken this role as the guy really, really well. And I think that's a trickle-down effect. I think it starts with the head coach, trickles down to the quarterback, trickles down to the rest of the team. I think this team's going to be fun, going to be loose. I think they're going to have a great time this year. Hopefully it translates to wins on the field. And if it does, I think, you know, that I just you said it, positive mental attitude. There's a good vibe around this team right now, and I hope it continues until November.
Yeah, I hope it does too. And Jeremiah Mazzoli finally gets his chance to be the undisputed number one guy. And, you know, I assume that he is over the moon thrilled about that. And maybe that's why you see the change in his attitude with the media. He's just a happy guy right now. He has his team. He's the leader.
Yeah. So to move from the positive to the somewhat negative, I think we have to touch on the news that Drew Edwards kind of sort of broke, but really just confirmed what we already knew. And that was that the Ticats are not going to be re-signing Andy Fantuz. And reading that, it was somewhat upsetting, but can we really sit here and say it was all that surprising? I don't think so.
No. I mean, when we were talking to Justin Dunk earlier, he mentioned how great Chamad Chambers played when he got a chance last year in a Ticats uniform. And I agree. He really stood out, and he really contributed to this team. So, you know, they're going younger at that position. Fantuz has been spectacular for the Ticats, has had a great CFL career. And, you know, maybe it's not over yet, but at this time, it's a good thing, I think, that they're moving on and going with the younger blood.
Way to absolutely ruin the magic, Mike. Dunk earlier, we haven't talked to him yet. Wink, wink.
Oh, all right. Yes, of course.
Well, the cat's out of the bag now. Damn it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Mike
ruins everything. I think that should be a shirt.
Yeah, tweet it out.
Anyway, yeah, like, you're right. This team, they have somewhat of some depth at receiver. You talked about earlier, Drew, talking about Felix Faubert-Lucier during minicamp. You talked about Chamad Chambers just now. Mike Jones is still here. Who?
Mike Jones.
Yes, he's had his issues, especially late in the season, but look at what he did to start the season. He was playing really well. Maybe they're going to draft a receiver. Like, as much as I want to see Andy Fantuzzi here, he's kind of a luxury the team doesn't really need. And with all the talent that they have at American receiver with Terrence Tolliver and Luke Tasker and Jalen Saunders and Brandon Banks, and just I don't see a spot where the team really needs to start two Canadians. Like, if we look at the ratio, you got your three offensive linemen, you got your one Canadian receiver, you got your defensive tackle in Ted Laurent, you got your defensive end in Justin Capicotti, and you got your DB in Courtney Stephen. There's your seven starters. Yeah, I guess they could start a second Canadian receiver. It's a luxury they could have, would allow for some ratio flexibility, but they don't really need it. And, you know, injuries could happen, and maybe Fantuzzi gets a call later in the year, if he's still available, obviously. But, yeah, it's like it just sucks because he was such a part of this team, and it's another one of those players from the last few years that's no longer here, and it's pretty much a brand-new squad from what we had just, like, 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, it is. It seems like Fantuzzi has been with the Ticats forever. It hasn't been that long, but it seems that way, that he's been a life or a career-long Ticat. But, he's not going to sign back with the team, but I remember him fondly playing for the Tiger Cats, even though there was some injury troubles in there. When he was on the field, he was still one of the best receivers in the league. You know, he doesn't have that blazing speed. He never has, but he just contributes in many, many different ways.
Another knee injury that makes you wonder, what if? What if Fantuzzi doesn't get hurt in that late season game against Edmonton a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Where does his career go from there? It's so damn unfortunate. Speaking of unfortunate, talking CFL news for a little bit, not a whole ton. Everyone's kind of ramping up to the draft, so there's not really all that much to talk about outside of the draft. The Riders released a quartet of players, Jeff Heck, Eddie Meredith, Taylor Mays, and the guy that we want to talk about most, Peter Diakowski. Left Hamilton last year, spent a few weeks in the oblivion, don't know what happened, and somehow he got traded to Saskatchewan, even though it wasn't from Hamilton. I don't know. They say he was with the Argos, but I've heard that that's actually not true. But anyway, he went to Saskatchewan, played there, started all 18 games last year. But it looks like they're going to go younger and cheaper on the offensive line. What do you think, Mike? You think this is the end of the line for old Peter Diakowski?
I think it is. I think that you saw the decline in his play while he was with the Ticats. And we all know that, you know, there's a lot of love for Peter Diakowski. He was a great Tiger Cat in his time, but I think it's coming to an end. I think this last year was his last year. I don't think he'll get a contract offer. I could be wrong, but I just see so much decline in his play that I don't think he's gonna get another shot.
And let's just squash this right now. He's not coming back to Hamilton.
The
Ticats don't need him. As harsh as that is to say, they have three guys in the offensive line that can start. They're more than likely going to take, I would assume, an offensive lineman at number two in the draft, or with one of their many draft picks in the first couple of rounds. Peter Diakowski's not going to come back here and start. He's not going to come back here to be a backup. I feel like we've moved on from him. It sucks. Maybe sign a one-day contract, retire a Ticat, get the whole pomp and circumstance, maybe even have a Peter Diakowski night at Tim Hortons Field for a game this year, maybe against the Riders. I think that might be a fun one. But I think we just, like, I don't know. I'm sure there's a team out there that could probably use a player of his caliber. He's not coming back to Hamilton, though.
No, yeah, he's not coming back to Hamilton. You know, there's just too much talent Canadian-wise on that offensive line. We're set with our offensive line. You know, all the guys are in place. And, I don't see him. You know, it would be nice. I'd take him as a backup, as a depth player on that offensive line, but I don't see it necessarily happening.
All right. Unfortunately, we have to stay in Saskatchewan, and usually we do Bozo of the Week, but I'm not sure Bozo of the Week is a strong enough word for what we're about to talk about next. I've debated between two. We can either call him a chode, or we can call him a slapdick. What do you prefer, Mike?
Well, we got to go with chode. We got to go with your word.
Okay, so we're going to call this the chode of the week. We'll save slapdick for another time. And this goes out to, you know, Bozo Hall of Famer, Chode Hall of Famer, Rod Peterson, for calling Bo Levi Mitchell mentally weak because Bo deleted his Twitter account. Here is the exact quote from him, from Peterson, on his radio show. "It tells me, quite frankly, how mentally weak the Calgary Stampeders quarterback is. And that's not me beaking. I teach athletes and public people how to deal with trolls because you're going to have to change. Society's not. And for Bo Levi to say, I'm off Twitter now, just tells the trolls they've won. It's a shame for the CFL that Bo Levi Mitchell is going off Twitter because he was good for the league. I'd love to have an hour with Bo Levi just to tell him how he needs to look at things and not turn and run. With the exception of him saying that Bo Levi Mitchell was good for the league by being on Twitter, everything else about this is abhorrent. Mentally weak? Mentally weak? You're calling a professional athlete mentally weak because he decides he's not going to be on social media? That is, like, and the thing is, he's talking about trolls. This is Peterson trolling people. And it's is he trying to be like the hot take artist of Canada? Because this to me is so beyond the line of what is acceptable to say things like he's a professional athlete for crying out loud. The last thing he is mentally weak. He's got a family. He's got a young kid. He's got a wife. He's got a family. He doesn't want to spend his time dealing with idiots like Rod Peterson on Twitter. This is just. I saw this and shaking my head does not do it justice. This was one of the stupidest things I've ever heard anyone say, period.
Yeah, the mentally weak comment is just way over the line. That doesn't, you know, he got off Twitter and yes, he was good for the league on Twitter and I followed him and everything like that. But I mean, there's a lot of crap you got to go through when you're a professional athlete. And you're on social media like that. I mean, things thrown your way, you know, disrespectful comments, all this stuff. And I don't know if anything's been thrown his way like you're mentally weak on Twitter. That's just, yeah, I don't understand where he's coming from. Is he just trying to, you know, stir up some crap like he usually does or trying to get attention for himself? I just don't get him. I never really understood his logic, his thinking, and this is just another one to add to the list.
Yeah, I've never really understood his appeal. Like, I even know Rider fans who can't stand this guy, and I get it. He's a homer. He's, you know, he's stoking the flames of a rivalry. Calgary and Saskatchewan kind of have a bit of a rivalry going, but this to me is too much. There's a level of which you don't go, and I I'm kind of at a loss for words. I'm just like so ticked off that someone would say this, and I'm laughing because I can't believe a radio dude who, and I'm not trying to say anything about him, but has had his own problems in his life, is out here talking junk about someone else. It's like, maybe take a second, think about what you're about to say, and instead of saying it, don't say it.
Right. I mean, he could have broached this subject in many different ways. He didn't have to go to the mentally weak avenue. I mean, it's just a dumb comment. But like you said, he's like the Skip Bayless of Canada, it seems like. And he's going to throw his uneducated opinions out there, in my opinion, and dumb opinions. It just never ends with this guy, it seems.
Okay, so from dumb opinions to great opinions, Mike, you let the cat out of the bag earlier, so I guess we'll just say we're going to throw to our talk with Justin Dunk about the CFL draft. If you want the complete opposite of Rod Peterson, stick around for the next 15 or so minutes. You are going to get a draft lesson from the guru himself, Justin Dunk. Mike, it's draft season. The draft is coming up on Thursday, and we have ourselves the guru of the draft as far as I'm concerned. The maestro of tipping picks, our boy, Mr. Justin Dunk. I think it's fair to call you our boy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, man. We share three down, of course.
Absolutely. How are you doing today, Justin?
I'm well, guys. Pumped to be on.
Y'all, how's the battery in the phone? Is it all ready to go? Because draft's coming up fast and furious. Can't believe it's already here, eh?
Yeah, it's come quick, guys. I just pretty much leave it on the charger. Otherwise, it seems to get drained quickly. So that's kind of what we're doing this week.
Alrighty. So let's talk about the draft. Before we get into Ticats stuff, obviously, we're Ticats pod. We want to talk everything Hamilton Ticats. I just kind of want your overall thoughts on this draft. Is it a deep one, a top-heavy one? What's kind of the feeling on where this draft stands compared to, like, drafts of the recent past?
Well, first off the top, it has some high-end talented players. It's tough, like more so than let's say, a year ago in 2017. There are a number of guys in this draft that, if they were in last year's draft, could have gone in the first round and maybe bumped some of those guys down. So I hope that gives you an idea of the elite and talent. And we've seen a couple guys sign NFL contracts, UDFAs, but still, so that speaks to the talent. For positions, offensive line is very, very, very deep. Defensive line is thin at receivers. There's a couple difference makers in Mark Chapman and Rashawn Simonize. The linebacking core is decent, if unspectacular. It's not really a group that jumps out at you, but there are probably some solid value guys that you can have in the later rounds of the linebacker spot. And then in the defensive backfield, that's where really on the defensive side of the ball anyways in this draft, the depth lies. You talk Jackson Bennett, Godfrey Onyeka, Jordan Bellew, just to name a few guys that we could see potentially come off the board in the first round. So I think there's some elite athletes at that position too.
All right, so let's talk about the Ticats then. They have 5 picks in the top 20 of this draft. I know it's kind of a cliche to say, but would you think it's fair to say that Hamilton kind of controls this draft, at least early on?
Yeah, and I don't feel like it's cliche at all, because when you have that many picks, like 5 in the top 20, you're essentially picking, you know, every couple picks, right? And with what they can do and some of the rumors and speculation that I've heard, they have the number 2 overall pick, and then because they have some of those picks in the second round, and there's teams like, let's say, Montreal that doesn't have a second round pick, or other teams that might be in that boat, they could possibly, you know, package a couple picks and try to go back into the first round if they wanted. I'm not saying they're going to make a deal with Montreal at number 1 because the Ticats have the second pick anyways, but they can probably maneuver a little bit because they have some of those extra picks, or they can just sit still and draft the best available player at each position. I really do feel like the Ticats control this draft based on where they go at 2 and then what happens in the second round for them.
All right, Mike, why don't you jump in here and ask our man some questions?
All right, so we have 5 picks in the first 2 rounds. I'm just wondering, if do you see them taking a shot at one of the players that got signed by an NFL team, maybe being a little patient with one of their picks?
I could totally see that, fellas. I feel like when you look at the Ticats and where they're going to play their Canadians, they can, at number 2, get a player that's probably going to come in right away if they want to. Let's say Trey Rutherford, an offensive lineman out of UConn, didn't choose to accept any minicamp offers because he wanted to focus on the CFL. Peter Godber is another one. So I feel like offensive line, strong possibility at 2. But then, as you said, when you get down in the second round, it's going to be tough for them to pass up a guy like, let's say, Dakota Shepley or Ryan Hunter, maybe even if they slip to the 3rd round, just based on the talent compared to what's left on the board. So I do feel like they could take a look at, as they call it, a futures pick because of the amount of picks they have.
So you mentioned Trey Rutherford. He's a guy, like you said, he declined invites to mini camps or tryout camps of some sort with NFL teams. Where would he have been, say, like, I've seen some stuff, and I'm not sure. I'm looking to get your opinion on this. Has he bumped up draft boards because of that, seeing as now he's focusing on the CFL as opposed to being a guy that teams might not know if he'll be there? Like, maybe he signs a – we saw it with, you know, Lyndon Gadosh a few years ago. He went number 1 overall because, oh, he's not going to go to the NFL, and then, boom, he goes and signs with the Panthers. Is this helping Rutherford kind of jump up draft boards because he's going to be available to a CFL team this season?
Exactly, man. It really is. Like, I'm hearing there's an opportunity for Trey Rutherford to go number 1 overall to Montreal because you know he's going to be there in camp. Ryan Hunter obviously takes a hit because he signed with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's out of Bowling Green. Dakota Shepley, offensive lineman UBC, signed with the Jets. So he'll go down. And for that reason, Rutherford bumps up. And he's not even taking a minicamp invite. So there's no risk that, you know, maybe he goes to a minicamp, performs well, and gets a contract. So certainly, I feel like I would be surprised if Rutherford isn't off the board within the first 3 picks of the draft.
Now, excluding those couple guys you mentioned that have signed NFL contracts, who do you feel is the best O-line prospect, the most pro-ready, that can come in next year and contribute?
Ooh, well, you know, I hate to go back to the well, but it's got to be either Trey Rutherford or Peter Godber, because you know both of those players are going to be there. There are some other prospects that had minicamp invites, and as you said, that signed deals that would be in that discussion, but just for the pure fact that they didn't have any NFL opportunities or chose not to pursue them, it's Rutherford or Godbert for me.
Okay, so where do you see kind of the Ticats looking in this draft? And maybe this is the fan in me, but I look at their roster, I don't see a ton of holes. I don't see a ton of holes in their Canadian content. Every team can obviously use depth. The CFL, we all hear, you win based on your Canadian, so there's obviously talented players that could bump some guys off the roster. But this is a pretty veteran-heavy team. Where do you think the Ticats might be looking with their many, many picks in the first couple of rounds here?
For sure, and we've already talked about offensive linemen again, but I got to go back to the well, just because you look at, you know, they're going to have their three Canadian starters there, Revenberg, Filer, Bauman across the board on the interior. And you have Braden Schramm last year, who was a pick who's in development. You have Landon Rice, who's sort of getting a bit up there in age, and some people feel like they can upgrade to. So offensive line is certainly a spot. I feel like receiver is somewhere else that they can look at, too. They had Shamaad Chambers, you guys know well, had the great end to the season last year, sort of showed the potential that he can reach when he came out of the draft a few years back. And then I feel like you look in the defensive backfield, because with Courtney Steven being so versatile and the depth in this draft at the defensive back position, that if you feel like you can get a guy, and first of all, that can compete on special teams right away, because there are a number of them in this draft, then you can maybe play around with that back end, right? We've seen Courtney Steven start at field corner. So if you get a guy who can develop, let's say, in a year into a starter at safety, then you have that added ratio flexibility, as you guys well know, that is so hotly gone after by CFL teams.
Now, Dunk, I know that you're a big – if you listen to the Three Down podcast with yourself and Drew Edwards, we all know that you're – we all know that you're a big Canadian quarterback guy. Is there a QB in this draft that will be picked or maybe after the draft that will be signed to a contract?
Well, my mind goes right to Regina Rams quarterback Noah Pickton, and his size is going to work against him. But the guy won a heck Crichton in U Sports in 2016, followed that up with another strong season in 2017. But everyone is looking at this kid as being too small. That said, there have been some scouts that I've talked to that really like, and I hate to get into cliches at all, but really like the moxie of this kid, really enjoy him and see him as a guy that could be a leader and feel like he is smart enough X's and O's wise to get a chance to develop, pick up the CFL game. There have been a few questions about his arm strength and can he make every single throw required at the pro level when the speed bumps up and you're trying to throw, let's say, that wide field go route or that wide field out or comeback route that we all know is such a tough throw to make at the pro level. But I feel like there is a chance that Noah Pickton could get chosen at the end of the draft. And if not, I would imagine just, and I hate to say this, but for PR reasons, that he'll be in a camp, possibly the Riders training camp, just because of his connection to Regina. And on that note, I remember seeing at the CFL Combine as I was walking out the door, Chris Jones was talking to Noah Pickton for quite a while and patted him on the back sort of as if to say, good job. So that's why I feel like at the very least, he'll be in camp with the Riders. If he gets a legitimate chance, that's a whole other question, but you at least just got to get there to give yourself the opportunity.
So we've talked a lot about kind of the top end guys here, but you know, we here, we're fans of the grinders, of the guys who get their nose dirty. You mentioned special teams before. We love those guys here. Justin Vaughn was a guy the Ticats selected, I believe, in the fourth or fifth round last year. Not much was expected of him. He started a game for the Ticats last year. He produced on the field for the team in his rookie season, which is kind of unheard of a little bit for a fifth-round pick. You normally see the first two rounds kind of – those guys get on the field, but those late-round guys don't see a ton of action, especially starting. Who are some under-the-radar guys or some guys that no one is talking about or we're not talking about that could have, say, a Justin Vaughn-type – season their first year in the CFL?
Yeah, I like where you're going with this, because this is where the nuts and bolts of the draft happen, fellas. And as you well said, Josh, the guys at the top two rounds, they really get all the coverage, and the top two rounds are buried on TSN on TV. But when that comes off TV, I feel like, you know, some of the sort of more fair weather CFL fans might tune out. And these are where teams can be built. And we've seen a number of guys they're even undrafted, like let's say Jimmy Ralph, who last year had more receiving yards than any other rookie in the draft. Like Danny Vandermore was number three in BC, and Jimmy Ralph had guys that I like that could be had in the later rounds of this draft. And there are reasons as to why. First that comes to mind, because offensive line is just such a crucial spot in the CFL, is David Brown, an offensive lineman out of the University of Western. He was an absolute stud and probably would have been at the East-West Shrine game, but he tore his ACL in the Vanier Cup, guys, literally taped it up and played the rest of the game on it. And we all saw how much the Mustangs dominated that Laval defense, which is known to be strong, especially against the run. And the Mustangs ran all over him, and the guy had a torn ACL. So if you can get past the fact that you might have to wait a little bit for Brown, he's going to be a guy that would have easily been chosen in the top two rounds, probably the first round, if he didn't get NFL interest, because that could have been a possibility too, that could really be a late round steal. He's one of the guys, you know, right off the top of my head that I feel like if you can be patient and just wait for him to get healthy, and yes, you know, there might be some worry around the ACL. That injury nowadays seems to be kind of normal that you can recover from it. I mean, from guy to guy, different, but he's a guy certainly that jumps out to me. Flip over to the defensive side of the ball and defensive end Kenny Onyeka out of Carleton. Now, the only reason he's going to slide down the board is because he is planning on going back to Carleton to finish his engineering degree. So, smart kid, going to finish the good degree, but his talent and on tape, scouts have told me that he's the best pass rusher in this draft. So, if he starts to fall and goes down in that third, fourth, fifth round range, that's the guy that I feel like you could pound. It goes along the same line of David Brown if you're going to be patient. One guy at the linebacking spot, really a deep class, but is Michael Cote out of Concordia. This guy just looks the part. Maybe didn't run as fast of a 40 as you would want him to, but I feel like you get him in the later rounds, he can be a guy that can control the team. So those would be three guys right off the top of my head for me that could be value picks.
Now, you mentioned you were at the Combine in Winnipeg this year. Was there anyone who was a relative unknown before that that really raised their stock at the Combine?
Cool. That's a good question. I mean, I would have to say throughout that process, the one player that helped himself possibly more than any other was, and I mentioned him quickly earlier, defensive back Jordan Bellew out of Western University. He was solid and physical on film, but then he showed up and he was absolutely chiseled and proved he was more athletic than scouts had assessed on film. So he was probably a late round pick just based off of his film because he didn't flash some of these athletic traits all the time on there. But then you get him in that combine setting and he was really able to jump himself up the draft board. There were some people saying to me that, you know, maybe the first round. I just don't see it with the depth of the offensive lineman available in this class. But I feel like he took himself from a late round guy to a mid round guy through the combine process.
Justin, thank you so very much for coming on here and giving us the deep dive on some of this draft stuff. Before we let you go, just let everyone know where they can find you online, social media wise. And if there's any plan, what are the three down plans for the draft on Thursday night?
First of all, you can find me at JDM12 on Twitter, man. And I love being on the pod for sure. Part of the three down fam. And, you know, plans are still being finalized, but you guys know this well. We're going to cover it from every angle possible. And you can not get enough of the CFL if you're clicking on Three Down Nation. So always bang it there and we'll have you updated on the draft.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to get you on sometime. You're on here almost every year for a draft preview. So we'll get you on a year from now. We'll talk some more draft stuff. You are
and the three down get down. Three down get down next year at my place in Edmonton.
Whoa. What's this? Is this breaking news?
Yeah, you're not invited, Josh. No.
I'm staying there.
Important people.
I'm staying at your place.
No, we're going to kick me out for the night. But
Josh's club?
Yeah, no Josh's.
You're allowed one. Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Anyway, Justin, thank you very much for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Dunk.
Enjoy the draft.
Mike, first off, three down, get down at your place? What the hell's going on?
yeah, you know, it just came to me. Well, like, why not? I'm sure that the three down get down will be at some sort of establishment. But if everything falls through, you know, I'm going to have a party here.
Yeah, but I can't come. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that ridiculous. You know,
you know what?
You're not very well liked around the Three Down Nation crew. I'll tell you what.
You know what? I'll slip the doorman a Finsky, and I'll be in there partying up with the rest of you.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm the doorman, so slip me a couple bucks.
Okay. But being completely honest, when the Three Down Get Down is going to Edmonton for Grey Cup, you and I are going to be there.
Oh, absolutely. I was there last year. You know, we watched the Vanier Cup during the Three Down Get Down. It was a lot of fun. So maybe next year it'll be the same thing, and we can watch two great teams in college football battle that out for the national championship.
But in all seriousness, how great was that? Dunk dropping nuggets, dropping bombs, giving us the good insight. That's why we have him on here. That's why we make the call. That's why we put out the bat signal for Dunk, even though he probably has no idea what that means. Great to have him on the show, so I want to thank him again for coming on. Mike, what did you glean from that conversation? Now we're looking at Ticats. Where do you think, or where do you hope this team makes some picks here?
Well, listen, I'm an offensive lineman guy. I think that you can never have enough good Canadian offensive linemen, and it, like Dunk talked about, this draft is very, very deep with O-linemen. I mean, I'm just looking at the top 10 here, and we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the top 10 that are offensive linemen. So, you know, we're good at that position right now, but looking down the road, you can never have enough. So I'm hoping that they stockpile the offensive linemen.
So you go offensive line, and I'm going to go where I think everyone who's been listening to the show since day one knows. I'm going to go get a Canadian receiver. Get, you know, I think the guy that I'm looking at, offensive line-wise, Dunk talked about him. Trey Rutherford, I think, would be a great guy for the Ticats to get at number two. I think because of all these picks, they can take a chance on a guy like Dakota Shepley. And here I am sitting here talking like I'm the expert after having a good conversation with Mr. Dunk. But I know these names now thanks to him. I could see them, you know, taking a chance on him with one of their early picks. But, man, go get one of those receivers. Get a Mark Chapman. Get a Rashawn Simonides. Bring one of those guys to Hamilton. You can't get enough offensive linemen. I can't get enough Canadian receivers.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm looking at Mark Chapman right here, and he's from Central Michigan, his school that he went to. His hometown is Port Huron, Michigan. So I don't know how he ties in to a Canadian. Like, how is he a Canadian? But there must be something there that I'm missing. Maybe he was born there and grew up in Canada somewhere. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe he's got a parent that's Canadian. Probably. That counts, too. I'm sure it's something. Yeah. But I don't know. Chapman or Rutherford's one of those guys is definitely going to be there with the number two pick, so hopefully that's one of the guys the Ticats could snag.
Yeah, hopefully, and you never know, maybe they pull a Revenberg and pick an offensive lineman that we never heard of and turns into a gem again.
Absolutely. So the draft is this Thursday. I'm going to be watching it from the comfort of my home. I'm going to be tweeting stuff out. Mike, I'm sure you're going to be – are you working, or are you going to get a chance to watch the draft live?
No, I think I am off, so I will be able to tweet as well. Maybe we'll get some tweets out on the Podski Wee Wee Twitter account as well.
Perhaps we will. We'll figure something out. You can follow us on our social media pages. So that's the end of the show, man. So let's get the plugs for the social media pages. Draft's coming up. We're going to do a season's coming up, for crying out loud. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff on our social media pages. So please feel free to hit us up on Twitter at Podski Wee Wee. And of course, we have our own personal accounts where you can find us. Mike, where is that with you?
Mike_Ticats.
And I am Josh_82. Don't forget that you can get this show wherever you subscribe to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, all the places where you get your podcasts from. And of course, you can get them over at 3downnation.com. And, you know, you want to have a question thrown to us, you want to talk to us about something, always hit us up on social media. Of course, you can also hit us up in the comment section on 3downNation where this show goes up. And, of course, don't forget you can pick yourself up some merch over at our store, shop.spreadshirt.ca/podskiwiwi. A little bit helps. Use that money to help fund the podcast, to pay for our hosting fees. Love the fans out there. Get those shirts out. It'd be awesome. And, Mike, that was episode 106 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.